Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's SDI Trademark Clearinghouse call, we have Mike Rodenbach, Zahid Jamil, Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, Jeff Newman, Wendy Seltzer, Robin Gross, Paul McGrady, David Maher, Jeff Eckhouse, Kathy Kleinman, Alan Greenberg. From staff, we have Amy Statos, Margie Milam, Liz Gaster, myself, Gisela Gruber-White, and we have apologies from Mark Partridge, Mai Diop, Konstantinos Komaitis, and if I could just please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. This is David Maher. Our first topic is the name. And at this point, there seems to be consensus on Trademark Clearinghouse. Anyone feel differently about that? Margie.
Oh, I just had a different point. We did cover it with the schedule, but also, too, just from so you know what to expect, we just sent out this trademark proposal, or Jeff sent it out, Trademark Clearinghouse straw man yesterday. Staff hasn't had a chance yet to evaluate it from an implementation standpoint, and we expect to put something together similar to what we Kurt sent around yesterday, kind of thinking through some of these from an implementation standpoint. So just wanted to give you guys a heads up that that's what we'll be doing.
Okay. Then there is an issue listed under the ICANN default proposal, two providers, each global, one charged with database administration and one with validation. I'm not clear whether this is the discussion of the function of the clearinghouse. In any event, do we have consensus on separate validation from database functions? I believe we do, but anyone disagree with that? Okay, moving along then.
Well,
the clerk.
Wait a second, David. I'm sorry. Was your question was do we still have an issue with splitting the functions?
That's right.
Okay, sorry. Mike Rodenbaugh. Yeah, I would speak to that for a moment.
Okay, go ahead.
Following on what Marcy was just saying, I mean, I think generally it sounds wonderful to be splitting up the functions and have more competition and more providers involved, you know, getting a piece of the pie. But my big concern is that there's really not going to be much pie here, that there's just not much of a commercial opportunity for this given the restrictions that folks are putting on the use of this thing. I just don't feel that it's going to be used either by brand owners or particularly by very many registries. With the exception maybe of sunrise periods, which, as we know, most brand owners are not very interested in. So I'm wondering, you know, maybe Margie has an answer here, what effort was made after the IRT report or with any of these proposals since to engage people that might, you know, bid on these projects, get their views about commercial viability?
Margie?
Yeah, is Kurt still on or is he offline? I know that there may have been some discussions on the services side. Maybe Amy can comment.
Yeah, this is Amy. We have not undertaken any type of analysis on getting and talking to potential providers at this point in time.
Okay, well, I think that that's something, you know, I hate to make our work even more complex, but I feel like we've come too far at this point, and we're talking about unimplementable solutions. That's my pretty strong view.
So, Mike, just to clarify, if I might, David, I'm sorry. So the both proposals are basically two providers, at least at a minimum, that would be one to do the database function and one to do validation or authentication or whatever it is that we're calling it at this point.
Yep. I'm not sure there's a big enough business opportunity even for one business, much less splitting it in two. I see absolutely no value to the IP claim service, the way that it's being framed. to only end at, you know, whenever the registry operator wants, you know, after the first 30 days or 15 days or whatever they want to run for a pre-launch period. After that, it's completely meaningless. The only other value to this clearinghouse is with the sunrise period, which, again, was the whole reason we're talking about rights protection mechanisms. It's because we've had sunrise periods in the past. Trademark owners aren't too interested in them, particularly if we're not going to standardize the processes. And I guess I'm hearing we're not even talking about standardizing the processes anymore either. So I honestly see no value to this clearinghouse idea as it's being framed right now.
Okay, Alan?
Yeah, I guess I can't comment on whether there's perceived value or not. I would like to, however, get out of the business of detailing the implementation and instead stating the principles. You know, whether there are two providers or one, I think we've said that the validators must be close to the source. That is, they must be familiar with the laws, they must have the right access, they must have the right language. And whether that's done with subcontracts or different contracts with ICANN, I don't think we need to specify now. So I think we should specify the principles and then let staff come up with something that's implementable in line with the principles. Whether that means one or two entities or one clearinghouse and 400 validators, I don't think we need to specify, as long as we're clear on what we want the end product.
Okay, Paul.
Sorry, I was on mute. I apologize. But the only thought is if we start busting up the idea of two providers, and again consolidating them into one, for purposes of making it more attractive to a potential vendor. You know, our only concern with doing that is that not everyone's given up on the concept of regional evaluators, and so what we don't want to end up having is a combined operation of database and validation in five or six different regions.
Paul? Hello? Alan?
Yeah, I would have thought one of the principles we've all agreed on is one centralized database. So that's dividing up into multiple databases should not be one of the options. We're talking about the structure of the operational part. By the way, there was also a third one we talked about last time, and I don't recall how it was resolved. That is, who does the trademark owner go to register a domain name? You know, what's the entry point? Is that the validator? Is that the database? Is that a third function? I don't remember how we came out with that. But again, I think we need to state the principles and not try to build the entity right now.
Yeah, I think that's a very practical suggestion. We're probably getting too deeply into the details here. Unless anyone has something further to say about the function point on our chart, the straw man proposal, I think we might move along to the relationship with ICANN. The straw man proposal is for a centralized database to have formal contracts, including SLAs, full-time, every-day, all-year-long support, data escrow. And the one that's the relationship issue. Any comment on that? If not, I think we have a consensus. Which brings us to the area where there may be some discussion, I would imagine. The straw man proposal for marks that are eligible for inclusion are those nationally registered markets, but no common law rights and no court-validated marks. Let's talk about that first. anyone have a comment on that?
Okay, Mike Rodenbaugh.
Go ahead.
Again, you're just further denigrating the value of the whole clearinghouse I don't understand why you would keep those things from going in. It's the whole point is to notify people when there's a potential issue, and you want to keep limiting the potential issues that people can notify. I mean, you're by eliminating common law rights, you're eliminating in particular a lot of celebrities globally who don't have registered marks but clearly have famous names that very well might use the clearinghouse. So again, I just don't really see what the point is of limiting it.
Alan?
There are certainly advocates within at large of supporting common law marks. There are some who don't necessarily see the need for it. I would say, however, that the fees need to be set reasonably based on what the validation is going to cost. If one includes common law marks where one has to start looking at actual use over the decades or court validations, they're likely to be complex processes and everyone should not have to pay for those. A celebrity's name may be a simple one to validate.
Jeff?
Yeah, so in coming up with the straw man, we tried to do what there was a consensus on in the community and tried to come up with some standard way of doing it. Common law was just too difficult in the sense that not every country recognizes common law rights, and that there was no way for a complete validation, a standardized validation process to validate those rights. Again, we're talking about a database validating pieces of paper or entries in a patent and trademark office online database. We're not talking about a validator going in and looking at court documents and trying to decipher a court opinion, which God knows how difficult that could be. The point of including common law rights, I think the IRT made a mistake in using the term common law when what we really meant to say was that nationally registered marks and other marks that a registry chose to have validated, the clearinghouse should have the ability to validate those, of course, for extra fees, as Alan said, and others, even charged to the registry itself. So if a registry said, look, I want to have a sunrise, but I want my sunrise to include those. I want to run a dot pizza, and I want those restaurants that serve pizza to be eligible, even though they don't have registered marks, that somehow, in some way, the clearinghouse, in theory, could validate that. But that was at the choice of the registry and not something that was the minimum requirement. So coming up with a minimum requirement, it just seemed logical, and everyone seemed to know the agreement with anyone on the call about nationally registered marks. There seemed to be disagreement on the other two.
Okay, Paul.
First, apologies for my phone dropping the call before. I don't know what happened, but this issue is really not IPC's issue because most of the people who we are involved with have trademark registrations. But I would like. Just again, I guess this is probably a final appeal since we're getting to the point where this has been talked about too much. But just if there's anybody on the call that cares about small businesses that they have rights or sole proprietors, college athletes whose names, they're about to become trademarks. I mean, anybody like that that's concerned about those sorts of smaller users. It would be great to hear from somebody that is concerned about those folks and to see if we can find a way to include them.
Okay, thank you. Wendy?
So, obviously, we're all concerned about all of the different people who might have claims to domain names or claims to rights to prevent people from registering them. I don't think this database is the place to add that complexity.
Okay. Thank you. I think we can move along then to the other portion of this topic, the question of identical match. There's quite a long description. The domain name consists of complete and identical textual elements, and then an explanation of what this includes in spaces, special characters, punctuation, plurals, and so on. Does anyone want to speak to this?
Mike Rodenbaugh.
Go ahead.
So just to be on the record saying that, you know, I definitely am looking out for the people that you're talking about, Paul, small businesses. I think that this provision, the way it's worded now, actually does that. It helps smaller businesses, but it really doesn't help well-known brand owners at all, because the percentage of cybersquatting domains that would qualify for this notification is tiny. There's so many more Yahoo plus other word infringements than there are just Yahoo. It's not even funny. I mean, it's like 1 to 100 or something like that, at least. And I'm sure that that's very typical across all brands that get a lot of traffic on the Internet. So I don't really, again, see what the harm is of allowing plurals or marks-contained strings to trigger a notice, which is all it is, a notice that can be worded however you want so that it is not so frightening. But I just think that at minimum, brand owners ought to have the option to include plurals and other strings that they've already won in UDRPs, for example. They should also have the right to exclude some strings to deal with the Venom versus Enom situation, so that if Enom puts its mark into the database, they could exclude Venom so that doesn't trigger a notice, if that's what they'd like to do. You know, Yahoo might exclude Ballyhoo because that one kept coming up in our searches. So, you know, there can be more flexibility in how this is used, and at minimum, registries that want to have that flexibility and use this data in other ways ought to be able to do it.
Jeff Newman.
Yeah, so I think, Mike, I think on your last point, registries that want the flexibility to do it will have that ability. Again, it's just not the standard clearinghouse service, so that probably means they're going to have to work something out with the clearinghouse and probably have to pay their own fees and other things. But the standard service should just be, again, for this type of mark. And we're not just talking about IP claims. We're talking about Sunrise here. And these rules that are in the strawman document are the same rules that have been implemented in all of the Sunrise processes. The only one that had additional rules was .eu. But again, we're not saying the registry can't have additional marks in there. We're just saying that a registry only has to implement this minimum.
So fine, but then you agree that the clearinghouse at least could and should be designed so that it can have more flexible uses than what's contained here.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Okay. Kathy?
I just wanted to note that that the idea of identical maps has been significantly expanded from what NCSG was really looking at. NCSG was supporting an absolute identical match of the textual elements of the mark. And in extensive discussion with Jeff and others, I came to understand better, and I've been working with my group on this, that if you have an H&R block, that the ampersand cannot be registered as a character in a domain name, so that someone, either the trademark owner or another type of registrant, might put a dash there or an underscore there. So what we see here is actually an extensive expansion over what NCSG was looking for, and I just wanted to note that.
Okay, thank you. Wendy.
Yes, question of how this is in scope for what the database contains. I understand that registries can make their own choices about how to match on the strings that are contained in the database after the fact, but why we need to choose when entering into the database, I would think we should enter the mark as registered and let the registry choose whether and how it wants to expand special characters or substitute once it pulls the marks out.
Okay, thank you. Jeff, do you still have your hand up?
Yeah, well, on that point, I think, Wendy, part of the IRT recommendations were to have a standardized sunrise process, and I think that was also a bunch of the comments we received from intellectual property owners, is that leaving even the standard sunrise service up to the complete discretion of the registry would cost them, IP owners, a lot of money to at least set these bare minimums of what's required in a sunrise is a good best practice to recommend to registries, and even more than best practice, mandatory, that if you're going to do a sunrise, you at least need to do these things, but you could always add things on top of it. So I think it's very relevant to address the intellectual property owners' concerns, which were, we're spending too much money, all the sunrise processes have different rules, we're not sure how to keep on top of it, and if you launch 200 at once, there's no way we're going to be able to do this.
Mike Rodenbaugh.
No, that's exactly right. So there has to be some sort of minimum, bare minimum standards, but again, we have to be able to have some flexibility, and maybe this is why it's so important to have common law trademark rights included at the brand owner's option, because, you know, again, you're excluding so many common law marks of Yahoo here, Yahoo Sports, Yahoo Mail, blah, 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 hundreds of them, literally, because Yahoo could never afford to register all of those marks all over the world. But they're basically indisputable common law trademark rights under any country's law. So you're doing a real disservice here by making it so narrow. You're doing a disservice to the brand owners, and you're doing a disservice to the registrants who could be getting a notice and might avoid a problem.
Okay. Alan.
I'm not sure this makes sense or not, but when you factor in the types of things that Mike has said and Jeff's statement that some registries may want a wider range of trademarks that they're using for their sunrise process or their IP claims process, does it make sense to say this is the minimum that the clearinghouse must use and that every registry who has a sunrise must adhere to, but the clearinghouse may have provision for other types of trademarks, and a registry can opt in or out of using them. So in that case, the problem with what Jeff said is every registry that comes on would have to negotiate something with the clearinghouse, and then all the mark holders would have to go and add the ones that are applicable. So perhaps the clearinghouse should have the discretion of adding other types of marks, and then a registry can opt in or out of using them in any given launch period. I'm not sure that makes sense, but as I hear people talking, that may be an answer.
Kathy?
I thought we had been down this road many, many times before, and that we had come to some level of extensive agreement on this, that registries can do whatever they want. If they want to survey pizza restaurants around the world, survey pizza restaurants, artwork, you know, and the titles of artworks, go ahead and do that. But that this ICANN, this contracted ICANN database was for nationally registered marks, and it's an efficiency mechanism for these verified marks so that the trademark owners don't have to put that piece of paper, that trademark, in 500 different places. And that's, I mean, that's where we're coming in at, is an agreement, a basic agreement on what this trademark clearinghouse, capital T, capital C, is, and that ICANN will be part, you know, will be basically certifying it. So, again, I thought this was a done deal of that registries can do whatever else they want, but not, you know, survey children's names, whatever they want, but not, it doesn't belong in this single database. It can go in another database.
Jeff Beckhouse.
Yeah, I sort of want to maybe, I don't know, I think I should expand on that, or what somebody else had mentioned is that
you know, we're starting, part of it was the whole idea is like, hey, this is going to be the one central place. And I know we're still discussions on the mandatory, you know, yes or no, but now it's we're starting to add in all this flexibility and all these other pieces. And so I think we need to just step back and say, is it going to be mandatory? Are we going to have to certain rules? If we are, then we can't start building in all this flexibility of who can use what, how it can be put in. I thought, and to what Kathy's saying, I hope the whole idea was for the efficiency to have this one centralized place versus now it's going to be a whole, you know, a mix-up of what certain people want, how it's wanted. I think it doesn't jive with the idea of what the clearinghouse is supposed to be.
Wendy.
Yeah, I think we are mixing too many different issues in here at once to be able to talk effectively. Since we haven't reached consensus on whether this is mandatory, whether registries have to use it in a uniform way, it then becomes difficult for us to talk about what's contained in it because we each have different notions of how those pieces of contained data will be used. Not sure how to resolve that question, though.
Okay, thank you. Jeff?
Well, so I agree with Wendy that we're mixing up a bunch of issues. We're mixing up the collection versus the use issue. I was not aware that there was any dispute that if a registry implements a Sunrise or an IP claims that it had to use this clearinghouse. Is that still up in the air? I thought that was resolved. I thought there was consensus on that point.
I think there is, and now it's Mike, but now what we're talking about is what sort of flexibility the clearinghouse has and the trademark owners have to put data in which would trigger a match. And then, of course, we started this by talking about what exactly would trigger a match.
Right. So on that, the IRT recommended that, just like Mike was initially saying, the IRT recommended that there's a bare minimum of data that it collects and that's going to be the and then on the other side, there was a bare minimum of what a registry needed to do if it implements a Sunrise. But then there is the flexibility to have additional data elements in there, and I actually don't see an issue with that. In fact, I think it's best for – I think that is in the interest of both commercial and non-commercial communities in the sense where if I'm a .shoes and I want to limit my registry to only those registrations that are in a certain class of goods and services, I should – have the flexibility to do that. But I'm not sure why we're confusing these, but I do want the first question answered. I thought it was mandatory in the sense that, first of all, it's mandatory that a registry, that if a registry does a Sunrise or IP claims, that they have to use the clearinghouse. I think we need to answer that one. And I think it should be.
Jeff Beckhouse.
Yeah, so, Jeff, I agree with you. I think that we did come to agreement that it should be mandatory to use it. I guess my point was then we're saying that I do have to, if I'm the registry, then I'm saying I do have to use the clearinghouse, but then it's up to me to decide how to use it and which terms. So if I'm using .shu, then I don't have to put in, you know, Yahoo Sports, you're saying, into it. I get to choose which of the terms I want to put in, or could I exclude Yahoo in general? I mean, that's the question I have is, if it is mandatory, then do I get to pick and choose how I use it and which terms get put in?
So to answer that, from the IRT standpoint, if you wanted to do shoes and you wanted to exclude Yahoo completely because they don't have any registrations in any of those categories, then the answer would be, according to the IRT report, yes, you could exclude Yahoo completely.
Okay, so yeah, so that was my, I guess my point was that, yes, so it is mandatory, which I think we're all in agreement with, but then the registry can pick and choose which of the terms from the clearinghouse or how it decides to use the clearinghouse. There's no mandate on how it's used, just that it has to be, that they have to use it.
Paul.
This is Paul. I'm trying to understand this conversation, and I apologize. What we're saying is the question essentially that a trademark right could exist within the clearinghouse, that a registry could choose to do a Sunrise, and however that registry can choose to exclude certain marks or certain
international classes of goods and services or other things for purposes of their registry?
So to answer that, I think the answer is yes, but it would have to be, I mean, I would argue that there has to be some explanation as to why the registry is excluding those marks. So if you are literally a .shoes and in your application you talk about, I'm limiting my domain name registrations to only those companies, shoe companies, that could show that they are a shoe company, then I think they would absolutely be justified in not necessarily doing a sunrise that's open to all trademark owners, no matter what class of goods and services. But I think that was always kind of the understanding of, at least in the IRT, that was the understanding. But again, it shouldn't be, you know, I'm doing a .web, and I only want to accept trademark registrations from shoe owners, right? There should be some explanation in the or acceptable explanation in the application as to why you'd be limiting the sunrise.
Yeah, I've got serious concerns about that, and I think that's something I'm going to have to take back to the IPC and make sure that they also view that the same way, Jeff, as the way you've set forth. Because what about, maybe they don't make shoes, what if they make belts and purses, or what if they make coats? What if it's of a nature that, are we also saying that if we're only going to consider trademarks related to shoes at this, this point, that the registry also has an obligation to make sure that only shoe-related content is expressed in conjunction with domain names in the second level? To me, that opens up a can of worms. I think that the clearinghouse should be the clearinghouse, and the marks that are in there should be notified to the potential registrant so they can make a good decision. If they get a claims notice, for example, they can make a good decision about whether or not they want to register the domain name.
Okay. Kathy?
I just wanted to share that the understanding shared by the two Jeffs was the understanding that I had, that the registries would have a great deal of choice in tailoring the use of the trademark clearinghouse to whatever the launch was of the new GTLD. And the dot shoe, probably should go far beyond shoes to related goods as well. I would think belts wouldn't be unusual to include in that as well. But craft foods might not be something where you get an IP claims notice in dot shoe for craft. At least I had understood it the way the Jeff explained it. But let me throw out another whole set of new GTLDs, which might not be applicable for use in the clearinghouses at all, for use of the clearinghouse at all. Anything commercial, .web.travel, makes sense to me that this is used and that it be required to be using this clearinghouse. But .advocacy, .criticism, .sucks, we may have new GTLDs that are specifically non-commercial. And I would think that the registry would only well-documented and for very, very good reasons choose not to use the clearinghouse. But I would think it would have to be very well-documented on their part.
Jeff Eckhouse.
Yeah, so thanks. I just wanted to now kind of bring back full circle to what my original point, one of the points of my argument here was that if you're going to allow not exact matches and other common law trademarks, then the registry should have some flexibility. But if we're back, but that's the whole point, because then it just opens it up. But if we have, I guess you could say, just the exact matches and the small, and it's more narrowly defined, then I think people would be more okay with having mandatory for all terms for the clearinghouse. But if you open it up and you allow so many different marks, and some kid who's in high school who may become a football player and his name becomes a trademark, I think then you might want to give the registry some flexibility, because you could kind of shut out almost everyone. Because I think my kids are going to be superstars, so you can't get their names. That's sort of, we've just got to put a limit on where we draw the line. I'm sorry, of where the trademarks are.
Paul?
Hi, I want to ask a follow-up question. Are we, in terms of the narrow
the narrowing of the uses of the clearinghouse, are we making a distinction between narrowing those uses for purposes of a sunrise and narrowing the uses for purposes of an IP claims? Because that may make a difference. I mean, I understand the notion that if I'm launching Dot Shoes, I only want a sunrise for people who have registrations in a certain international class because I've written my restrictions in a way that only the people who sell shoes are allowed to be registrants in the first place. That doesn't bother me. What bothers me is the notion that it would be narrowed for purposes of the IP claim service. Jeff, can you speak to that or somebody else?
Yeah, so I mean, I suppose they could be differences between the two, although it was envisioned that a registry would either do a sunrise or an IP claims, and what you're saying is that in some cases they may be required to do both, which is not something I've thought about or the registries have thought about, but there certainly could be a difference in that if you wanted to do a little bit broader of for IP claims. I guess then the question would be to Kathy and others, is a chilling effect. If you're giving out notices for in a Dot Shoes by Kraft and the notice basically says you may be subject to challenge, would that be too much of a chilling effect? And so that I would kind of throw back to the non-commercials.
Hey, Alan?
I'm getting a little bit confused. Maybe I'm not the only one. We're talking about the clearinghouse being mandatory, but the registries may pick and choose which types of marks they use in any given case, which would sound like they also have the ability of not using any of them, which makes it not mandatory. So I seem to think we're talking mixed metaphors here. That's one point. The other point I wonder is to what extent, if we really believe a clearinghouse is needed, are we sure that, given that it will only be used pre-launch, and we don't know what rate new GTLDs are going to be launched 2 years from now or 3 years from now, do we need to even consider whether this is a viable business model and whether it's going to be sustainable? Because if we believe it's necessary, we may end up in a situation where there's no one who wants to offer it.
Okay. Wendy?
Just re-raising the question of where the consensus is around on mandated use. I am hearing some around if a registry chooses to use a list of trademarks, this is where it should draw that list, at least the core of its list, to which it may choose to add or subtract. But I have not heard a consensus that a registry launching new domains must do anything with a list of trademarks.
Whether they must have a sunrise or an IP claim service, that's what you're asking?
That's right. Do we have a consensus that they must have anything at all?
I thought that we did and had since the IRT report, but I may have missed it if we don't. But perhaps couldn't it be addressed, following up on what Kathy was saying earlier, you know, if the registry operator had some really good documentation as to why not, then perhaps I can grant an exception.
Jeff Newman?
Yeah, I think that was the point, was that it should be mandatory that an IP claims or sunrise. But the IRT did have a sentence in there saying basically that there may be limited circumstances in which it doesn't make sense, in which case the registry should have to explain that to ICANN and that has to be vetted and acceptable. So, for example, a .IBM, if IBM wants to operate a .IBM and only have employees register that address, there's really no need to have a sunrise or an IP claims. But all of that should be explained in their application, and it should be acceptable to ICANN in order to do that.
Okay, Wendy.
Okay, I'm still questioning whether we have a consensus or whether we just have various expressions of interest around the idea of it being mandatory. If it is still an open question, I don't agree it should be mandatory.
Even with an exception process, as we've just discussed?
Even with an exception process. Although.
Kathy.
A question. Does the DAG speak to this? Is there a required IP claims or Sunrise as part of the application process for new GTLD?
Just to clarify, the DAG, none of this is in the DAG because the DAG specifically chose not to put this in. It's a separate explanatory memo, so there's nothing in the DAG.
Okay.
I mean, it's Mike Rodenbach. Is there a queue? I'm sorry. I'm not in the Adobe room right now.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, I mean, Wendy, if it's not mandatory, you know, with a limited exception process, I can agree with that. But if it's not mandatory, what is the incentive to use it? Why would any registry use it?
Isn't the answer to that it's a question of convenience instead of getting involved with in unknown areas, you have some certainty that there's been some validation process.
Hey, can I ask a question? This is Jeff. Let me ask it the other way. Does anyone think that, and Wendy, are you saying that even for something like a .web that's open and generic to the entire world, no restrictions, you still believe that it should not be mandatory? I believe it should be. And if we could start from that standpoint, then maybe I think we're making some progress. But I want to hear from you whether you believe, even in that case where it's completely open, you do not believe it should be mandatory.
I would start by allowing the applicant to specify something that might be different.
Okay. Well, I think we may have. I'm not sure there's consensus, but I also am not sure that we're making any progress on this. Perhaps we really ought to move along, unless anyone has something to add beyond the positions already expressed.
So this is Liz. I'm just trying to take notes. Wendy, can you just identify the concern, and I'll capture it here?
It's just I would like a bullet point in our list of is this mandatory for registries to use in the launch of a new TLD and some discussion or notation.
But why wouldn't it be? So why shouldn't it be?
Because I think that there are alternate ways from checking anything against the list for registries to assure that trademark holders have the opportunity to protect their marks. If we have narrowed the opportunities for mark protection to checking a list, then I agree that this list is the place that they should check. And I'm really asking a procedural question of if there was a consensus here and I missed it, fine, I'm out of turn, but let's please document that consensus.
Okay, I think we'd better move along. The next issue is the duration of required use, if it is required, of the trademark clearinghouse. And the straw man proposal is to support the pre-launch of a registry, either for Sunrise or an IP claim service, and potentially pre-registration process for the URS, but no post-launch IP claims. Mike?
Just to clarify, no post-launch IP claims are required, but still could be used by the registry if they choose, correct? Do we have consensus on that point, or does anybody...
I believe we do, that as an optional resource, it will be available.
Then how about putting some sort of minimum period on the so-called pre-launch, whether they choose a Sunrise or an IP claims, because otherwise they can choose a one-day period or a one-hour period, and I guess that would satisfy the rule as it is now, which is they either have to have one or the other. So I think we need to put some sort of more limits on at least the minimum duration of these functions. Otherwise, they could be entirely meaningless.
Well, I think that may be somewhat outside the scope of this proceeding. I agree with you that a ridiculously short Sunrise, but I think I would assume that ICANN would catch that in the application process. If there's an illusory claim of rights protection, ICANN's application process should pick that up. Jeff Newman, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think we set a minimum days, but I think we should document Mike's concern in our report and basically say, you know, a reasonable time period to achieve the goal, right? So and you could spell it out. So I agree with we can't really specify an amount of days, but the concept should be in there.
Okay.
I should just clarify, David, it's Mike, that I'm not in agreement with the straw man. You know, I think that the IP claims need to be mandatory for all lookups. I haven't heard any good reason why it shouldn't be.
Mike, are you saying post-launch also? Is that the gist of what you're saying?
Correct. Otherwise, in my mind, the IP claims service, okay, just looking at that alone right now, if you are allowed, if the registry is allowed to just offer it for 30 days or 90 days, what is the point? Obviously, no infringer is going to register during that time period. They'll just wait until the launch. So it is entirely meaningless if it's limited to so-called pre-launch.
I think you're have a minority view there.
Explain to me the benefit.
Well, it's not a question of the benefit. I and perhaps someone else, Jeff Newman, do you want to speak to this?
I could certainly speak to the harms, and I could explain how the costs would outride the benefits. And I think we've done that on the last few calls, and I think I put some of it in the explanation in the Common Grounds paper. You might not think it's good, Mike, but I guess that's your subjective opinion on that. I'm not sure what to do. We've kind of been through this and round and round, and you don't agree with it, and that's fine. I think that should be documented, but I'm not sure what else to say on the subject.
Yeah. I think we have there's disagreement. There's no question about that. So we move along to the required elements of the notice, which is the next topic. The straw man proposal, the clear notice that the registrant may proceed to register if it does not believe it will infringe or plans to use for non-commercial or fair use. There has to be a clear description of the goods and services, the jurisdictions, registration numbers, date of first use, date of registration, and provides either actual clearinghouse data in the notice or, if feasible, a link to the data and the applicable database, and finally indicates that the registrant should consider consulting an attorney to register to understand his rights. Any comment on that? Paul. are you available? Well, go ahead, Alan. Alan?
Muted. I'll make my standard comment that we need to put a reference in that statement regarding language.
Okay.
I'm sorry, this is Paul McCready trying again. I keep forgetting to unmute the phone. I think that this, you know, that there is general, I believe that this statement captures what needs to be there. I very early this morning, and Kathy's not had a chance to look at it, I've sent Kathy a draft proposed notice. She and I are working on making sure that the notice is useful to the end user, hopefully she and I will have a chance to sort of go back and forth over the next little bit, and then we'll be able to produce a draft notice how we think it should look and feel to the group in the next day or so.
Okay, thank you. Kathy?
Paul just said what I was going to say.
Oh.
Thank you, Paul.
Very good. Okay, then I think we can move to our final point, which is the effect of filing. We clearly stated in the mandate of the database that simply inclusion of a reviewed mark is not proof of any right, nor does it confer any legal rights on the rights owner. I think we do have consensus on that, unless anyone feels differently.
I don't think you should give people the opportunity now.
Yeah.
But you have to be a fair chair.
Yeah, God knows. Thank you. We've run through about an hour. We can extend this call, but we've come to the end of this straw man proposal. I'm perfectly willing to say that we've completed our work for this morning or the afternoon, wherever you may be. Does anyone have anything to add at this point, or shall we adjourn until next week sometime?
It's Alan. When we started this discussion, I was saying that on the issue of separation of database versus validators and such, we should try to document the principles. I'll volunteer to try to put something out in the list in the next day or so of what I think the principles that we've all agreed on are.
Good. Thank you. That would be much appreciated. Okay. If not, thank you all for participating. I think we've made some very good progress. And we'll talk next week sometime.
Thanks.
Thank you all, and thank you for the 25-minute break before my next call.
Okay. Good.
Thank
good
you,
luck.
David. Thanks, everybody.
Good night.
Bye-bye.